Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
I'm Michelle Martin. My guest today is Terrence Wong, CEO of Azure Capital. We're discussing Bitcoin. It's surpassed the 23,000 mark. Hey, did you hear? Even Elon Musk has inquired about Bitcoin. He made news this morning. I was reading about how he engaged in a Twitter conversation with a prominent advocate of Bitcoin. So Musk asked about the possibility of converting large transactions of Tesla's balance sheet into the cryptocurrency. And CEO of MicroStrategy, Michael Saylor, has said that such a move would be, quote, a $100 billion favor to Tesla shareholders. And Saylor argues other S&P 500 companies could follow Tesla's lead. So why all this interest in Bitcoin? Let's take a look. It surpassed the 23,000 mark. I'll ask, is this rise sustainable? Do we expect it to continue? Also, Tesla, it's joining the S&P 500 this evening when markets open in the US. So are we expecting a trading surge? And as the vaccine rolls out, are there clear winners and losers when it comes to sectors beyond the obvious aviation? And here in Singapore, on the Singapore Exchange, the third non-REIT listed on the main board, GHY Culture and Media, did so last week at 6.1%. It's above its IPO price. Is this a sign of diversification of the index? We put all those questions to CEO of Azure Capital. Welcome, Terrence. How are you?
Hey, Michelle. Well, this is quite a heavy session today, considering it's my last for the year.
Well, we thought we'd squeeze out as much from your brains as we could, Terrence.
I'm just thinking of Christmas holidays.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, let's go ahead.
Clearly, Terrence is in holiday mood, but we'll try to see what we can get from him, all right? So first up, Bitcoin. Let's see what it's currently trading at, Terrence. $23,716. The momentum building, analysts predicting more gains ahead. We know that it's jumped, more than three times this year in big ways. So what do you think of Bitcoin's rise? Is it sustainable? There are economists who believe it's a bubble, investors that don't understand the supply dynamics of the cryptocurrency staying away as well. What do you think?
Well, Michelle, I think you're partially right. Since the middle of March, I think if investors were daring enough, they would have gotten away with like 500% returns on their investments. And even if you don't invest back then, in October, if you were to like put your money in Bitcoin, that value would have doubled. So a doubling within 2 months, I think that's not too shabby a return. Well, almost exactly 3 years ago, I remember that was during my Christmas holidays in 2017. That was the last time when it hit an all-time high. That was the last peak when it was flirting with $20,000. Mm-hmm. I thought back then there was wild speculation and there was insane exuberance that sent the prices running in 2017. Subsequently, it crashed 17% from the peak. But I think that this time around, it is not just purely sentiment-driven. It is not driven by, you know, exuberance. Institutions are actually into Bitcoin. We're not just talking about, you know, the small hedge funds trying to make 20-30%, but really the large institutional names like Fidelity, JP Morgan, and there are many prominent billionaires who are also in there. One of them is hedge fund manager Paul Tudor Jones. He invested in cryptocurrency and highlighted its potential as a hedge against, or one of the best, it is the best hedge against inflation. And he even went on to say that, you know, this may be one of the early tech discoveries, like if you were to go in very, very early on Apple, into the likes of Google. And he thinks that, you know, there's going to be a big jump in price since October. He went in earlier on this year, but I think since October, he's become increasingly more bullish on this. PayPal has also added the ability for clients to buy Bitcoin, which has opened up the market to millions of new buyers. So while I think one of the characteristics of Bitcoin is that it is very volatile. It will continue to be volatile, so investors obviously have to be cautious. It is going to be a lot more volatile than traditional asset classes like equity and bonds. But I think that this time around, it is different. It will be backstopped by interest in big funds. Unlike in 2017, when it was driven largely by retail investors, and when you know things don't look good, everybody scooted, and that is why there was a big slump in the prices of Bitcoin.
Really interesting perspective you've given us, the long view of history as well. You know, Tesla talking about converting large transactions to Bitcoin, do you think this is, again, wild speculation, or do you think other companies could follow suit?
Well, I think I wouldn't write it off because, like I said, this time around, there has been a lot more formal institutional money in there, and it is going to be one of those times where when there's validation for this product, there will be more money being poured in. So that's not something that will surprise me.
Okay, so you think that it is indeed a solution to the store of value issue?
Definitely. I do believe that it is going to be, in the mid to long term, this is going to be a good hedge against inflation.
If you looked at broadly at the whole cryptocurrency sphere, though, Ethereum, for example, does the same argument apply to other cryptocurrencies?
Well, I think investors do have to be a lot more cautious. Ethereum is a very distant number two, and it will but there are a lot of coins, there are tons of coins. And you know, over the last few years, I hear people like coming out with coins here, coins there. So it is not going to be a rising tide that lifts all boats. So if you want, and you want to play it safe, already I think that this cryptocurrency is not exactly for the faint-hearted. So if you really want to play it safe in a very dangerous world asset class, then you probably want to go with the number one or number two.
All right, sound points there. Terence Wong is CEO of Azure Capital, joining us live. So back to Tesla, it is going to officially join the S&P 500 at the start of trade in the US today. We saw some frenzied afternoon action Friday in markets. The electric car maker, by far the largest firm by market value ever to join the S&P 500. Some analysts think this is going to prompt dozens of index funds that tracks the S&P 500 to seek to purchase tens of billions of dollars of Tesla stock. What do you think? Are you expecting a surge in terms of buy-ins?
Well, Michelle, I'm probably not the best person to speak on this matter. Every time I think it has peaked, you know, it goes on to hit higher highs. And last Friday, you know, it was a record for the company. To its credit, I think Tesla has fully embraced retail investors like no other public listed companies. Its quarterly earnings calls, you know, regularly feature crowdsourced questions. I still remember in January, was it early part of this year, in earnings call, CEO Elon Musk said that, you know, he thinks retail investors have deeper and more accurate insights than many other institutional investors and analysts. So with Tesla joining the S&P now, there would be more, I believe, mutual funds and large institutional holdings if they are not already in there. I think they do have to basically up their allocation into this particular stock. But I think that a large part of this, as you can see from the big jump in the share price just this month alone, I think this month is up already 33%, which is, you know, crazy mind-boggling for such a big cap. Year-to-date, it has surged 8 times. So I believe that a lot of it is already in the price. If you're talking about the entry into the S&P 500, investors, okay, I'm going to give it another step, right? I'm going to double down. And
all
I think
right.
They should tread with caution.
Okay, got it. We hear it loud and clear. In the meantime, it also made big headlines last week. We know that the SGX, the Singapore Exchange, rather, has been a favorite of yield-seeking investors. You can see that with the popularity of REITs. GHY Culture and Media, though, is only the third non-REIT to list on our main board this year. Last year, there were none. So it began trading at 70 cents, that's 6.1% higher than its IPO price of 66 cents per share. And then it eased, let's see what it is currently trading at, if I can pull that up, GHY Culture. It is now loading. Last I checked, it was about 66 cents. Yeah, 66 and a half cents. So what do you think, this listing, do you think it is a sign that Singapore investors are branching out?
Well, I think that this is just great news. You know, I'm SGX number one fan. Over the last few years, it has become increasingly boring because, like I said, there were hardly any non-REIT listing. This year, or at least this quarter alone, we have seen like three of them, and overall positive on the on this IPO market. I hear that, you know, the pipeline of deals is looking very, very healthy in 2021, and that is because that, you know, there are these trailblazers coming out to list, and they have done not too badly. Particularly Nanofilm, which has seen a big surge, and I think that we need a variety of companies, and this is and what is notable also is that the cornerstone investors for GHY, even though it has not done tremendously over the last couple of sessions since its listing, but there are well-known cornerstone investors in this issue, and that means that there is genuine interest in the IPOs. It should be coming back. This will improve the depth of our capital markets, especially with a slew of, you know, privatizations, acquisitions, delistings over the past few years. I think since 2015, there has been a very, very strong trend towards privatizations. And speaking of delistings and privatizations, two notable companies over the last couple of weeks, Soybill REIT and HiP, just announced their intention to privatize. And I think that that's on the back of, you know, valuations being low, and there is a lack of interest in the market, as you can see from liquidity, which is very, very thin. But with this IPOs coming through, with an improvement in the sentiment in the market, I think that we will see fewer privatizations going forward.
Well, you're giving us some great insights, Terence. I'm glad you're in this Christmas mood. These are real gems. I wonder if you can share some thoughts on initial public offerings for our investor listeners. I remember those things went a bit crazy back in the 1990s, you know, when the first time that the stock of a private company was sold to the public. And if you just look at GHY Culture and Media, for example, if you bought at the open at 70 cents, you'd be in the red now. So
oh, yes.
I wonder if you can share some general thoughts on IPO buying for our retail investors?
Well, IPO is like this. When I first became an analyst, that was in 1999. The following year, in 2000, and I can't remember what I said on this program, so pardon me for repeating, but in year 2000, that was the peak of the IPO. There were like 74, 75 IPOs out there, and I wrote on, I believe, 50 of them. So there were many, many interesting issues. And like I said, when that happens, because the markets are very, very open to IPOs, it takes a life of its own. There are some companies that don't even need any form of marketing, and you can see the share prices go up 50%, 100%, 150% within a very, very short period of time. That's when you have to be careful. As I said, with IPO investing, it is like investing in any stocks that's been listed for a while. You have to go back to the basics. You know, you have to like look at the fundamentals of the company, the valuations, whether it makes sense, and not just ride on the sentiment. So we are not there yet. It's still very, very early days. There are only like three IPOs. And I think that investors are just getting ready and warming up to the game. So when, you know, euphoria starts to set in, I think that's when investors have to be very, very careful. IPO investing, just like any form of investing in the current crop of companies. So you have to be looking at the fundamentals.
Yeah, thank you for that. All right, so this, speaking of optimism, the vaccine front and the great news there, the positive developments have sparked optimism that the pandemic's end is in sight. And that is leading some to wonder if there are clear market winners and losers so far. I wonder, as you look ahead to 2021 and start to shape your portfolio for what you can expect next year, do you see some sectors that are clear winners and others that are clear losers?
Well, with the vaccine, what is immediately positive, and we've already seen the surge, you know, since October, there will be the guys involved in hospitality, in travel, tourism-related ones, consumption players, then you have really seen, like I said, a very, very sharp jump in many of these companies that falls within the sector, and not to mention the cyclical plays like banks and property firms. But I look to throw something that's, I think, a little bit more counterintuitive. See, with the vaccine, it takes time to implement, and it also requires governments globally to convince their citizens to take it. There will still be a lot of pain in the battle against coronavirus in the coming months. As you can see in the US and Europe, they're really struggling with new infections. US in the past week saw a quarter million infections a day, with over 3,000 deaths. No thanks to Thanksgiving, obviously. And that is why I feel, and Europe, good parts of it, Germany, France, UK, Italy, we are seeing a lockdown over the Christmas season. That's why I feel that it may be premature to write off the glove makers, which has slumped in the past 2 months since the positive news over vaccine came out. In fact, with the jabs, with the vaccine jabs, more gloves will be required. Picture this. Right now, people are only going to hospitals because they feel or think that they are infected. So they form a smaller part of the population. But with vaccines in place, they have to go for their vaccinations, the inoculations. Everybody will have to be in the hospitals, and there will be massive requirements for or demand for gloves. And the supply is extremely tight right now, given that the world's largest glove maker, Top Glove, has to shut its facilities due to COVID outbreak. So with this imbalance becoming a lot worse, a sharp jump in demand and a big crunch in supply, that would send the selling prices for gloves going sky high. And I think that this is going to be positive, at least for the next year.
A lot of fantastic insights there. Terrence Wong is CEO of Azure Capital. Happy holidays and thank you for being with us, Terrence.
You too, Michelle. Merry Christmas.
You too.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.